From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and this is a show where every week we deal with issues relating to mental health and personal growth from a holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit. The importance of finding that balance and becoming more conscious and aware of how finding that balance and creating it helps us live more with more peace and more power in our lives and a much more healthy life. And tonight's topic, well, actually, before I even say that, I'll remind all of you this is a live call-in show. And so if any of you are listening out there either via the Internet or locally in Phoenix, feel free to call in and ask a question or participate in the topic tonight, which I'll get to in a moment. And the toll-free number, if you're listening outside the Phoenix area via the Internet, which we had a caller from New York last week, I was very glad, is 1-888-437-7660. That's 888-437-7660. If you're in the Phoenix area, the local number is 480-874-1311. 480-874-1311. Now, tonight's topic, and I have a guest I'll be introducing later named Victoria DaCosta. Tonight's topic is speaking your truth, even in the workplace. And, you know, we know the name of the show is Tell the Truth Faster, and I'm often talking about this in the context of personal relationships, primary relationships, parents and kids, dating, our own inner truth, and making sure we're being honest between ourselves and what, however we define God or higher power. But this issue of in the workplace, a lot of people see it as very separate, and I don't. To me, communication problems are communication problems. Dysfunctional families are dysfunctional families, whether it is an actual primary family or whether it is defined as a workplace family, or even a family of professionals where there are general attitudes to deal with that have been established for years and years. It's the same thing whether it's the ancestors that have passed on belief systems and behavior patterns and structures of dysfunctional family or functional family systems and professions and companies and corporations that have done the same thing. I mean, we've seen the dysfunctional family system and how it's worked, you know, with Enron and all of the, you know, problems that have gone on. If you remember the movie The Insider, I think it was called, and within the tobacco industry, and how someone within the system saw the problem and saw that there was a lot of dysfunction and lying and chose to speak up. A little reluctantly, with a lot of fear, and the repercussions were horrible. So, like with anything else, what's the first thing in our mind? If I speak my truth, I'm going to get knocked down. I'm going to be told I'm wrong or I'm bad. I'll be abandoned. If I speak my truth in the context of the family and I'm trying to heal something within myself that may change the family system, very often that family system gets really upset with that person who is trying to get healthier and does everything in their power to sabotage that subconsciously, sometimes consciously. The same thing goes on very often in the business world. And it's a very scary thing, speaking one's truth at the beginning, you know, seeing something, getting more in touch with your own intuitive vision as well as what you're actually seeing, and seeing that there's a problem and doing something about it can be very frightening. It takes a lot of courage. And yet, But those, for most of those who have stood up and done something about it and have experienced the benefits of seeing changes, will tell you that it's worthwhile. I had an experience when I was fresh out of graduate school and working for a long-term drug abuse treatment program in West Palm Beach, Florida. And the administration changed at one point, and the new administration was really insane and manipulative and made life a living hell for everyone that worked there. And every staff meeting, every Friday, part of it was change that the new administrator was trying to implement, and all of us were real resistant to change. But part of it was really inappropriate stuff that I was seeing and feeling, that everyone was seeing and feeling. And I'm one of those people that is willing to open his mouth and bear the brunt of that. And it was really a living hell for quite a number of months until I finally decided to resign. And that way I could say what I wanted to the board, and I did. But before my resignation letter was implemented, I got fired and went through a whole nother thing. So the emotional drain was just intense. The upside of it was, having said everything I needed to say and then being willing to let go and move on, and other agencies in the area were thrilled to grab me up and get me on staff. About 6 months later, the president of the board of the first agency called me and said, "We just fired so-and-so, and we'd like you to come in and take his position and try and pull this place back together, because everything you said turned out to be true, and we're sorry that we weren't listening to you." That was a very difficult period, but the satisfaction, not that I was found to be right, but that a program that I really believed in and that I knew was doing a lot of good was, in a sense, saved to continue doing that good. And as long as that kind of insanity was going on in the place, less good was being done because of the drain on the staff. So to me, I have a first-hand knowledge of being one of those people that's willing to open his mouth and buck the system. And I know it's not always easy, and I also know it's extremely important. And that's what we're really talking about tonight. Speaking your truth, even in the workplace, taking those same things that I talk about on the show all the time, about communication, about self-empowerment, about trusting your intuition, and putting it to use in the workplace. And how do you do it? It doesn't always have to be done in a very aggressive way. Sometimes there are people within an agency or a profession that are willing to listen and are appreciating that kind of feedback, and sometimes there's not. So my guest tonight, and when you hear what she does for a living, you may say, well, why is a dental hygienist on the show about mental health? My guest tonight is a registered dental hygienist, and her name is Victoria DaCosta, and I met Victoria at Income Builders International, which I've spoken about before, and she immediately... I just connected with her and saw what a light she is and what a powerful woman that she really is. And when she started telling me about her story, I really related to it. And I'm really glad, Victoria, that you're joining us tonight, and I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Stuart. Glad to be here.
Thanks. I want to start by at least giving everybody some background. It's like I said, you are a registered dental hygienist, and you've been doing that for about 18 years. Can you talk a little bit about what you do and what your work environment is like?
Sure. I think one of the first things I need to clarify, especially for an audience that lives in areas that might not understand what the role of a dental hygienist is, we definitely are different than a dental assistant. We often get categorized as dental assistants because we're in an office with a dentist. People don't usually realize that we have separate training from a dentist, that we have a separate college that we graduate from. We have separate exams, national and at the state level. And basically my responsibilities in a dental setting is to keep the patients on a wellness program, if you will, a program that helps keep their gums healthy. I think we all know that dental hygienists are notorious for being floss naggers. But actually, we had to go to college to tell you to floss. But I definitely feel a passion for what I do, and I would definitely say that the average consumer lacks the education on how well trained and educated and how many hours we spend before we even work on actual patients, and how many clinical hours that we put in. So when we are doing our hygiene care visits with our patients, that we've been trained many thousands of hours to do the procedure that we're performing, and there's actual insurance codes and things that are billed out. We do work with the dentist, and we're considered a provider, but because of the way the laws are written, we are working underneath the licensure of a dentist.
So are you primarily an educator, or do you actually have procedures that you do with the patients in the office?
Both.
Okay.
We do both. And so in order to become a registered dental hygienist, much like a registered nurse, we have to take the appropriate examinations, which are given at a national level and then at your local state level. So if I wanted to practice in more than one state, I would have to pass those state exams.
Mm-hmm.
So much like attorneys or
therapists.
I
have the same situation, sure.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So we do bill out procedural codes. Now, that being said, some states have a law called general supervision.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you right there because we're going to take a short break and come back and talk about that and get a little bit more about the field in general right after this message. So please stay tuned. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Tonight's topic is speaking your truth even in the workplace. And my guest tonight is Victoria DaCosta, a registered dental hygienist. And you notice I pronounced it differently that time.
Yes.
It's the New Yorker in there. I want to say hygienist.
I know what part of the country you come from.
There you go. So you were saying about your credentialing and all that, and
right.
I'd like you to continue from where we left off.
Sure. Well, I was just mentioning that dental hygienists in some states are allowed to practice what we call under general supervision, and that means that the dentist does not have to be on the premise in the office for us to see patients.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only, I think, one state that dental hygienists can practice independently and see patients without having to work with a dentist.
Wow.
So, but the way that the system is set up and the way that the organizations and the associations out there, American Dental Association, has set it up is that we are providers and a licensed practitioner that has to work underneath another licensed practitioner. So we're kind of frustrated.
Yeah, okay.
Uh-huh.
Frustrated with that system,
mm-hmm.
But I remember you telling me also that you don't have an organization, a supervising organization of your own necessarily, that you actually are under the legal auspices of the Dental Association or Licensing Board. Is that correct?
Correct. We don't yet have our own licensure board in the state of California, which is where I practice, but that is in the process of being changed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I want to get right into how all this relates, because people are saying, well, still, why is he having a dental hygienist on to talk about self-empowerment? And it's not necessarily, I know one of the things you teach your patients is how to empower themselves to take better care of themselves.
Yes.
So in that sense,
correct.
You know, it fits what we're talking about.
Yes.
But I want to take it a step further, because I know when we first met, you talked to me a lot about the frustration that you were experiencing, knowing what you know about health care and,
yes.
and dental care and your expertise, and mm-hmm. seeing what you were seeing in the field,
mm-hmm.
and what you ended up doing about it, and why, and what you were up against to do it. So I'm just going to throw it out in those general terms, because you can talk about it better than the questions that I might ask you.
Well, I think one of the, and I was just at a convention, well, I wouldn't call it a convention, but an association meeting for the California Dental Hygiene Association, and there are about 200 dental hygienists there at the meeting, and we're, you know, voting on legislation things as delegates from each component. But that being said, the same frustrations are heard from every part of the state, and even when I go out of state to meetings, I hear the same frustrations from dental hygienists in other states. And I would have to say that because we are schooled and educated, our job responsibilities and our job roles are quite different than the dentist. And if there isn't really good communication between the dentist and the dental hygienist about that patient's health or state of health, there could be a lot of contention. And what I mean by contention is that as a dental hygienist, if I'm taking care to have a patient know about their gum disease problem, and I can't mention it to them directly because of the way the law is written, I have to dance around the issue. Like I was telling you a little earlier, is that I can say, looks like I think you might have. I can't come out and directly tell the patient they have gum disease. I cannot do that. And so even though I'm trained thousands of hours, I can't tell the patient they've got disease. And
but you have to set it up so that they'll ask the dentist about it.
Right. Well, if the dentist comes in and does the exam after my cleaning and says, well, I don't see, or it looks like a little bit of problems, but we can just watch it, I get so frustrated because what are we watching? Why do we have to watch the disease deteriorate their body when I know I can treat it? And a lot of times what I see and recognize as disease, the dentist doesn't see and recognize as disease. That and being said, I speak up.
Right. And the long-term impact, and this is something for some reason I really remembered from like high school biology, is how different teeth really in terms of infection can affect different organs in the body.
Absolutely.
And it's something that amazed me in high school. And so why would a dentist want to sit on it? Because if the infection may be mild right now and can be handled, why wait until it's a bad infection and also maybe affecting the rest of one's general health?
Well, that's a great question. Why wait?
Right.
And I think it depends on the philosophy. And I learned this in college, and I never understood what they were trying to teach me. You know, find a dentist that has the same philosophy that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought if you saw gingivitis or if you saw periodontitis, which is a certain kind of bone disease in the mouth, that you could pretty much see it and recognize it and tell the patient they have it and treat it. But when I got out of college, I found that not to be so. That what I saw as bone disease in the mouth, the dentist wouldn't see it, and or if they saw it, they didn't recognize it, and so they would want to watch it. Because until it got to a state of such recognition where you couldn't argue that that was a definite diseased mouth in that late stage, well, then we'll go ahead and treat it or refer the patient to a specialist. And I was of the mindset, as soon as you see the breakdown, treat it before it gets...
What I think what you're saying is that some of the dentists you're working with didn't even recognize it, even though you were recognizing it.
Correct.
So it's not just that they didn't want to treat it, they just, somehow, their training, they weren't in school that day or something.
Well, a lot of the training that a dentist receives, and I don't mean to say anything negative about dental schools, but they have so many things to learn. And I think about 500 hours of their training is in gum disease, whereas 2,000 hours we spend dental hygiene schools. So, of course, we're going to be more sensitive to the early breakdown of tissue and the medical implications than, would say, a dentist, because their focus is mainly on what we call hard tissue or teeth. And, you know, fair enough, I could miss something on a tooth but not in the gum.
Right.
The dentist might miss something in the gums and not the teeth. That's why working together, it's a great team when there's really good communication.
Exactly, which
but
gets
when
us
there's
back
not,
to the communication issue.
But when there's not, then the patient suffers and leaves the office with a false premise that they're healthy and that they're well and that this is just being watched.
So when you, in the past when you've spoken up in various work situations, during the break you told me that, like my story in Florida, that you've been fired three times also, so I gather that you've run across dentists that did not welcome your intervention.
No.
And right. pointing things out to them.
Correct. Correct. And it's a very intimidating feeling for especially a dentist who has that responsibility over their practice. That's liability issues for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I am usurping that opinion, per se, I could probably in the light of the patient make them look not as credible source. But I tell you, Stuart, I couldn't not tell the patient because I saw the disease and I knew it needed to be treated. And I'm not talking just a little gingivitis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking in cases where it was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some dentists that wanted just to wait and sit on it. And so over time, over a period of months, it would just build up and there would just be a lot of frustration on both of our parts because
mm-hmm.
we weren't seeing eye to eye on where the level of care was
mm-hmm.
as far as the out, you know, as far as diagnosing. And so I would be let, I know, I was literally let go. So, you know, and it was always when I didn't, you know, because that's when you get fired. You don't know you're going to get fired. You
right.
go in that day to see patients and they tell you you're fired.
Right.
So
it's, and all you were doing was from your heart doing
yes.
what you felt was right,
right
and finding that you were within a system that didn't welcome that.
Right, and it got to the point where I got beat up so bad that I kind of went on not a silent treatment, but I kind of just had to tone it down a bit. And I wouldn't say that I would walk in and be bold, you know, with the doctor, but I would definitely point these things out. And I think after a while I just got to the point where I needed to find doctors who felt the same way about health care that I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very challenging to find those doctors that feel the same way about health care that you do.
Okay, we're going to talk about how you created a solution to your own personal problem professionally when we come back from this break. So stay tuned. This is Stuart Altschul and Tell the Truth Faster. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altschul. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. And tonight's topic is speaking your truth even in the workplace. And my guest tonight is Victoria DaCosta, who is a registered dental hygienist. And before the break, we were talking about the problems you were running up against and
mm-hmm.
the more or less ego struggles and power control struggles and the turf wars, as you put it, also. And yet, everything I know about you in the short time I've known you is that, you know, your passion is for people, and your passion is for seeing that people have the opportunity to empower themselves to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And in your field, it happens to be about gums and, you know, dental disease. But what I've heard over and over again in talking with you is that something inside of you woke up to say, I need to find a better way, and I need to create it. I want you to talk a little bit about that awakening of your own power, if you could.
Sure. Yeah, I would love to. I think it actually happened 6 months out of dental hygiene school. And I was working on a patient, and I had, I don't mean to be graphic, but the patient had a lot of gingivitis in their mouth, and there was blood on my gloves. And on this point, I have a point, I took the gloves off, and I said to the patient, I'll see you in 6 months. In my heart, knowing that this, I was letting this patient leave the office with a false sense of health. And the way the system was set up at that time was there was no structure in place or system in place to protect the hygienist and the dentist and the patient. So over time and over the years, I had worked in over 600 offices. Just because of the way the system or the profession is, I can work in one or two offices a week. And temp.
It's
and
not that you were fired 600 times.
No.
Okay.
No, I've been a problem person, wouldn't I? No, actually, I was curious as to what was happening in all the different practices. And I think that was the way I could feel free, because I wasn't under somebody's control and I could go in there for a day and do my thing and then leave. But really helping patients, and no, there wasn't going to be too many repercussions because I wasn't there very long to get them. But over the time, I saw systems that I could create for dental hygienists. And if they followed this system, and the patients went to a hygienist that knew this system, that there would be checks and balances, kind of, if you will, a standardization of care. So if a patient really liked the way they were getting their care and that dental hygienist left, a new one coming in could follow the same schedule, or excuse me, the same system, and have those and have their care exactly the same. It wasn't going to be individualized. So what I did is I came up with hard copies and forms and charts and things that if they filled out these charts and they did this and they did that, that and ask these questions to the patient, they could do a lot of screening and a lot of data collection that would give them information. So I would know, you know, what kind of patient, care, or I could know what the patient liked, what the patient didn't like, what their preferences were based on, you know, even flavor of polishing paste,
mm-hmm.
down to how far to lower the chair, down to what their blood pressure was.
Okay.
Everything. So where would I put all this information? And I know dental hygienists only have so much time, and to write all this out was just going to take too much time. So in the middle 90s, I saw computer programmers coming out and doing a lot of work with dental offices and things like that. And I saw a niche for what we do being put onto a computer program. And with this computer program, I saw the need for the consumers to access dental hygienists on the Internet. And so what I'm in the process of doing is creating a checklist, if you will, for consumers to go to the website, look up the how to choose a good dental hygienist and how to choose a good dentist, or should, the correct one for them. Mm-hmm. What kind of steps and procedures are they using? For example, water filtration. Oh, gosh, the list is endless. But things that a patient can look for, intraoral camera, digital x-rays, things that are predate good technology. Whereas if you go to the dentist today and they're not using these sort of technologies or systems, then they're not getting the full care, even though they're paying the full price.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the key. So with my computer program and my Internet site, the consumers can go to the site, find their dentist or find a dentist in their area that has this program, and this program will guarantee, well, nothing's guaranteed with humans involved,
right,
but at least give them some kind of comfort to know that if this system is in a dentist's office, then they're going to get a certain level of quality of care.
Mm-hmm. And a certain level of communication, interaction, and honesty.
And truth, right.
Right.
The
mm-hmm.
education and the truth, yeah, mm-hmm. the truth about what their situation is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say also, because, you know, I've recently switched dentists, thanks to you. and Dr. Demergian in North Hollywood here, I mean, literally saved me $30,000 worth of work by fitting me for a simple appliance. And he had that internal camera that took pictures of, you know, I actually saw the pictures he was taking inside my mouth, and they weren't x-rays, they were photographs,
mm-hmm.
you know, and cavities that were bleeding onto the tooth, which on Saturday he changed all three of those,
mm-hmm.
And there was decay under it. My former dentist, you know, never even saw those things as a problem.
And you could see what the doctor was pointing out to
you. Exactly.
You could actually see it. And
totally.
I see a lot of consumers say, well, they take the doctor's, you know, word for it. Oh, I have a problem with math because you said I have a problem. But the technology is out there now that they actually can see it, and with magnification, mm-hmm. they actually can watch the procedure being done in their yeah. mouth on a separate TV while the dentist is working on them.
Well, I was amazed, and he was great, and he really fits this whole profile that you've been talking about, you know, the way he interacts with the staff in the office and the way he talks to me. I feel very respected throughout the whole thing, and I think that's so important with any healthcare practitioner and a patient's relationship.
Well, I think the bottom line is to, you know, and how I treat my patients is I facilitate their healing. I facilitate them getting well. Whether they want to participate in that or not, it's their choice, but I am not going to not give them that information.
Mm-hmm.
And how they want to use it, it's up to them. If they want to come back for the treatments and the therapy to get their mouth well, that's great. If not, they're not ready, that's fine. We'll just, you know, work with them over time.
Right.
And more often than not, my patients eventually choose to opt for the optimal care.
Well, sooner or later, the teeth tell them that they have to.
Right.
You know, but it's no different than a patient who's told he has, you know, high blood pressure and he needs to change his diet and exercise and stuff. And very often that doesn't happen until there's an episode that really scares them.
Right.
You know, so
right.
Take this now a step further, because this to me is really about a story of a woman who just wanted to be a dental hygienist and help people, and all of a sudden you're addressing a bigger problem and a solution that will be global, literally, on the internet and with these programs once it's implemented more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, even if they had the idea, would be too intimidated to think, well, I can't do that. Who am I to think that I can change the whole industry and attitudes and the whole profession and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that, and who am I to buck this? And I know you're trying to raise $900,000 to do all this stuff,
yes,
you know, to get the program and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, this simple dental hygienist from California now all of a sudden turning into this software conglomerate because of your passion for making a difference and doing this way. Where do you draw that from? How do you do that? I mean, it's like, to me, would be inspiring to a lot of our listeners who may have thoughts and ideas but are afraid to take the steps.
I think that what sparked me was the injustice, because I wanted to deliver the optimal care and I wasn't allowed to,
mm-hmm.
and I was discredited and devalidated. I don't know if that's a word, but
invalidated.
I was so shocked. And then I realized that it wasn't just me. I would talk to other fellow hygienists, my other colleagues, and they were up against the same issues. I would go out of state and hear the same problem. And then I would talk to just my friends or family members and find out that their care wasn't being taken care of. And I'll tell you, what really pushed it over the edge was when the Surgeon General came out and said that gum disease contributes to heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
Then I knew I had to really push this forward, because then I knew I was saving lives. And I knew not just saving a life, but I was saving a life in somebody's family.
Right.
And I was keeping a mom or dad around for a little longer. And that's what got me motivated. More importantly, was the life that we are saving.
Right. So even though, you know, a lot of other people will say, well, I don't know where to start with this, or this is too much for me to take on, this injustice and this motivation to actually make a difference one life at a time.
Exactly.
Is what's pushing you.
Exactly, because maybe as a little girl when I saw my grandmother lose all her teeth, it affected me at that time. I had no idea she was, you know, planting seeds to her granddaughter to be, you know, out in the middle,
mm-hmm.
or not in the middle, but in the forefront, you know, touting, you know, trying to help people in their oral care in conjunction with their total health. But I definitely saw the need.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to come back and continue this conversation with Victoria DeCosta. This is Stuart Altshuler, and Tell the Truth Faster. Please stay tuned for more. Okay, we're... Welcome back to our final segment tonight of Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and my guest tonight has been Victoria DeCosta, a registered dental hygienist, and the topic's been speaking of truth even in the workplace. And it's been about communication. It's been about drawing from the passion inside you, and in Victoria's case, it's been about the injustice that she was seeing within her own profession, and realizing that she got an idea to do something to help correct it, and she's running with it, and often out of breath, I might add, because it is a difficult thing. So for those of you who've been listening tonight, I'm hoping that one of the things you're getting is sometimes it's not easy, but it's always worth it. Would you agree with that, Victoria?
Absolutely. You know, and I'm really waiting for those testimonial letters thanking me for having the system in place because of the help and the guidelines and because of the guidelines in place and the help that their patients received. And I know the letters are going to come. I just heard too many stories of people passing away because of situations that were overlooked in their mouth. And it's just not necessary. And worth it? Absolutely. If it saves just one life? Absolutely. If a hygienist thinks twice because she's on my system to check something under the tongue and she sees something suspicious and it gets biopsied and it's cancer and it's taken care of at an early stage? Absolutely. I mean, you know, if I could, you know, keep a mom or a dad around for another 10 years because, you know, we did some kind of saliva testing or we took their blood pressure or because of the medicine that they were taking, we checked the medicine, it was, something was not right. I definitely know it's worth it. I've already seen it without my system completely in place yet, in the lives that I've affected. And I could give you countless stories of dental hygienists that have saved lives or have screened people and seen things and something wasn't right and sent them to a physician. And because of that intuition and that recognition and just paying attention and telling the truth to that patient, to have that looked at, they were saved.
Right. You know, I relate this also to the, to be honest with you, to the early days of the AIDS epidemic here in this country, when particularly our government didn't even want to address it. I mean, it's great that George W. is sending, you know, all that money to Africa, but, you know, Africa wouldn't be in the position they're in right now if people had cared enough about Africa 20 years ago when they already knew there was an epidemic and towns were being devastated, but because it was mostly gay men here, you know, nobody cared. Now it's in fashion to care about Africa, but there's still plenty in this country to do. And it was the people that were willing to be angry, and you know, even, you know, like groups like ACT UP, advocates who were speaking up within the medical community or to the medical community, and doctors, some doctors that had the courage early on to start treating something they really knew very little about and didn't know how dangerous it might be to them. But it's those people with the passion and the insight and the compassion to make a difference. And that's really what you're doing. I saw early on here, particularly in LA, but all around our country in Europe, around the AIDS epidemic, the people who were saw the injustice of what's going on and used that to motivate them, and they created changes. Services started being developed. Money started showing up for gay men, you know, in particular. And nobody thought that could ever happen. And it actually brought a lot of people together and more compassionate towards the gay community and within the gay community towards itself. So health issues, you know, and injustice, you know, can really create change.
Well, dental hygienists are the first line of defense in the healthcare industry.
Mm-hmm.
People come to us twice a year. 150 million Americans see their dental hygienist twice a year. We have the strongest screening capabilities in the United States. And other countries are looking to their dental hygienists here in the United States because we have such a well-trained program that we go through.
Mm-hmm.
So why not tap into that and let it blossom?
Right.
You know, and the frustration has been, and I mean, the American Dental Association has done a lot of wonderful things, but my frustration is, why are they keeping us from blossoming? Why are they keeping us from becoming the kind of practitioners and caregivers that we know we have inside us to give? And as a consequence, we probably lose a lot of good dental hygienists because they get frustrated, they give up, they leave dental hygiene, and they go into something else.
Well, I think part of it is a basic premise as a therapist is people are afraid of change.
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely, that's right.
You know, and change means changing attitudes and beliefs within any profession is always met with resistance and fear because people like what's familiar and they like the status quo. And when someone's saying, okay, yes, you've been doing good work all along, but, you know, here are some ideas that might be able to improve it, sometimes their brains translate that in, we're not good enough, you know. And if we let this happen, we'll have less control and power over our own sources of income and our own practices and everything else. People are afraid of change, even when that change is for the better. That's true within our own psyches and personal systems, as well as family systems, as well as professional systems, like I said. But I think what you're running up against is just a basic fear of change. And what I hear that you've been doing is the way it usually is implemented, one dentist at a time, one office at a time,
right.
You know, where you find those souls that are of like mind, so to speak, like you said earlier, and they're the ones that probably can approach the other dentist to do the change.
And I think it's also going to be consumer driven,
mm-hmm.
more so, because when the consumer asks for this kind of care, the dentist will want to give that kind of care, or at least be aware that they know that they need to change to give that kind of care, and accept the fact that the consumers are questioning now doctors more about their health and about materials going in their mouth and about, can this cause an allergy for me? Will this weaken my immune system?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the fact that I could write a program and put it out there so that other hygienists can be trained on this program and be using it in their private practices, that at least when the consumer comes to them, they can know that they're getting a certain quality level of care. So, yeah, there is the fear, but I'm trying to dispel that fear with practicality, if you will, a system that if this is in place, it will cover your issues of liability, it will cover issues of, you know, medical history data collection, and a numerous host of other issues that could be taken care of,
mm-hmm.
and for the doctor's office. And I see this as a bonus program for a doctor's office and not a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to take time, and when they see how the program works, they'll be more than pleased. And actually, to a lot of dentists' credit, they are looking forward to my program, and they do want something in their practice like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as much as I might come across as there's resistance to change and being open to seeing what we as dental hygienists see, what our role is, there are the dentists that do agree with that,
mm-hmm.
and do empower us in that way. But unfortunately, there's the good old boy system,
mm-hmm.
and that is very difficult to change and break into that.
I'm curious, actually, do you find, I mean, as long as you mentioned that, is there a gender difference in the women dentists that you may be dealing with, or do you find the same struggles with them?
I think from what I've heard, because I haven't worked for too many female dentists, only a few, and the few I had were just brief encounters of employment, because I was just filling in temp work. But what I've heard is it's the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really gender-based.
Okay. So they're actually ingrained with the same...
I think
so. It's like I said, in a family, everybody's getting the same information, the same belief system,
yes.
the same behavior patterns.
And it's set all the way back in dental school.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it's set all the way back centuries. So that's what the dental school connects to. But it's the same thing. Even in
yeah.
family systems, it goes, if
right.
you have to look back at the ancestors, too, because that's what brought us to who we are today. And I don't necessarily believe that you need to dissect, you know, every little childhood trauma and stuff in order to heal. But it is interesting to see the general behavior patterns and attitude patterns that go on within a system, and that's usually enough. So, Victoria, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. And,
you're quite welcome.
Not just for educating people more about the, you know, the importance of good dental hygiene and who, you know, dental hygienists are and how important they really are in the scheme of healthcare, but also for the display of empowerment and the example, the mentorship that actually I think you have presented to some of our listeners in terms of, again, seeing a problem that needs to be corrected and not, and maybe in spite of the fear, moving forward in moving towards the solution.
Absolutely.
And to me, that's what all this is about,
mm-hmm.
is solution and being solution oriented. So I'm inviting all of you to stay tuned for next week's show. We're actually going to be talking with another friend of mine, Mary Ellen Girac, who's published a book on treating children with ADD without medication, a more holistic approach. And stay tuned next week. And thank you for listening. And this is Stuart Altshuler, Tell the Truth Faster. Have a good night.